Good morning. My name is Salima, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Value Added Model Technical Assistance Follow-up Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. It is my pleasure to turn today's conference call over to Chancellor Grego. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Salima, and good morning to all, and welcome, and thank you for attending this conference call. I want to first of all thank the entire state and the districts for participating in the August 1, 2 technical assistance workshops over in Orlando. I read personally the evaluations of both those days, and they're exceedingly positive. And I want to thank AIR and the districts for participation, and also Juan and Kathy and staff here for really taking a huge task and making it what I thought was pretty personable. And the content there was very complex. So as we continue on, we thought it would be a great idea to follow up that meeting with some periodic conference call. Depending upon how this one goes and actually the needs for these types of calls, we anticipate continuing this type of process really based on your needs and serving the district. You know, based on the August 1 and 2, we were asked to produce a state average growth by grade and subject. I believe we provided that to each of the school districts, and thank you for that request, and hopefully that would be helpful. And I know Juan has some updated information on the aggregated value-added scores that was requested through AIR today. So today's conference call, we just want to really just listen and give you an update on things and also continue this process so that we can get to the to the finish line with this. And there's really no finish line here. We're going to continue to improve upon this model and continue to recognize that the system we're working on certainly is an improvement on what we've been dealing with up to this point. So I believe I'm turning this over now to Kathy Hebda to start us off.
Thanks, Chancellor. Just a quick overview of the three things we want to cover today. We know that you've sent us some questions. We've had lots of phone conversations and emails back and forth. Juan and I both have, and others of our staff, and that's been great. So because as a result of that, there are a couple of frequently asked questions we wanted to just take right off the top. Those will be brief, and then we'll have the majority of the time for your questions. We want to cover what's just a few things about regarding September 30th deadline, a recap of that. Juan's going to talk about the school component and what's in the data file, and review a couple of things regarding the aggregation options that you learned August 1st and 2nd and things that he has received questions on since that time. And then we'll take your questions. My part is the first part, which is regarding September 30th, just a reminder to everyone. By September 30th, we need two things. We need a letter signed by the superintendent that verifies that you are going to implement your plan for 11-12, just as it's been approved, including verification of any collective bargaining or school board approval that is needed to implement for 11-12. That varies by district, and so you send us whatever is necessary to show that you can do that. September 30th is the last day of the first quarter of year two of Race to the Top, and that's where the deadline came from. We have to be able to verify to the federal government that everybody is still in and implementing. The second thing, in addition to that letter, is just the final version of what you sent us back on June 1st. Many of you have made changes since then. You verified those things via us, the email with us, and John Moore, Eileen, Juan, myself, others, questions back and forth. And so we just need the final version of all those things put into one spot, just as you submitted June 1st. The one thing would be new on that documentation that you submit September 30th that wasn't done on June 1st is how you're actually using the state's value-added calculation and the student growth rating criteria for all your teachers, meaning, as Juan is going to discuss a little bit later, the methods of classification and aggregation that you're going to use, and any performance scale or cut points that were set for various groups of teachers. Juan will discuss those in just a minute. Lastly, some of you needed to tell us still how you're combining your student growth component with instructional practice to get a summative rating. Some of you did include that in June 1st. Others of you have modified that since June 1st. And so your final version that you send us September 30th would tell us how you're going to do that and arrive at a summative rating. Are there any questions, operator, just about the September 30th documentation before I turn it over to Juan?
To ask a question, please press star 1. Your first question comes from Paul Felsch.
Yes,
Leon County Schools.
Yes, this is Paul Felsch. Do I understand that the cut points have to be set by September 30th? I thought we just had to say that we were going to be setting the cut points.
Well, Paul, thanks for your question. It is known that you are setting the cut points, so we know that, and you do need to. That's what you've been working on since August 1st and 2nd to determine what your cut points are. Using one of the, for example, one of the options that you learned August 1st or 2nd to actually determine what performance might look like and set a rubric or a classification scale for that side of the evaluation system. And Juan will go into some of that in a few minutes with some of the frequently asked questions. But yes, that's your decision to make this year. So we need to have that from you.
So theoretically, we could have different cut points for different groups of teachers.
Well, yes, because in some cases you'll have different assessments for different groups of teachers. You know, most of your teachers will be using FCAT data, but others may not be using FCAT data. So you'll have to establish cut points for those various groups of teachers.
But let's say we're using Algebra 1 EOC for Algebra 1. We can't set the cut points now because we don't know what the passing scores are yet. The standards haven't been set.
Paul, that's correct. And I think just to reiterate Kathy's point, and she touched on this as well, with the information that's turned in September 30th, districts will have the ability to revisit some of those decisions when new information comes on board, even to be applied by for the 11-12 school year. So September 30th is not, as Chancellor mentioned, it's not the end of the road. It's just a key milestone that we want to get to ensure that districts are moving in the right direction to implement this beginning 11-12. But when you're exactly right in terms of Algebra 1 end of course, or perhaps you may be developing some district or local assessments where you might not have all that information in place for September 30th, those plans can be amended for the effect of the 11-12 school year. So,
and the same thing's going to happen with these other end of course exams as they get brought online. So it truly is a process, whether it be biology or anything else. Other questions?
The next question comes from Mark Howard of Palm Beach.
We are not an RTT school district. Does the timeline apply to us?
All right. Thanks, Mark. You did send us your documentation as a non-RTTT school district that you were that included the student growth and also the four levels that were required. In fact, you also sent us more than that. Most districts who are non-RTTT also sent us instructional practice, too. You do need to provide that information to us so that we can provide it to the legislature at some point. The reason for the September 30th date for a race to the top districts is to ensure that by the end of the first quarter of this year, too, they are able to continue to implement under the grant.
Right, I understand that question for race to the top schools. Since we are not, my question is, do we have to have the same materials to you by September 30th?
We haven't established a deadline for you all to do that specifically on student growth, but we did say that by December 1st, you should have the other instructional practice piece submitted to us as fully revised. So I would say no later than December 1st. That you would have to have that done.
The whole enchilada.
That's right, the whole enchilada. That's a good way to put it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
There are no further questions.
Okay, we'll continue then.
This is Juan Copa. I want to take a few moments this morning to go over one issue that is a challenging issue that we've been talking about a number of times. The whole issue of the school component. We've received a number of questions from some districts just for clarification on the school component. I think it would be useful to go over that for the for everyone at this point, just so we're clear on how the school component is applied to a teacher's value-added score. Using the data elements in your file, and this was, of course, presented at during the PowerPoint as well, the teacher's value-added score is the sum of the teacher effect and half of the school component. So it's teacher effect plus half of the school component. But this is a part that I think gets lost many times, and it's a really key part of the understanding. It's key to understand that the teacher effect is the teacher's performance relative to his or her school. Let me just repeat that. The teacher effect is her performance relative to his or her school. The school component is the school's performance relative to the state in the particular grade and subject area that the score was calculated. Of course, all these models are run by the school, by the subject level, reading or math, and by the grade level. So, for example, if you have a teacher with a teacher effect of 6, a school component of 2, her value-added score is 6 plus half of 2, or 6 plus 1, for a score of 7. On the flip side, if a teacher has a teacher effect of 6 and her school component is negative 2, the teacher's value-added score is 6 plus half of negative 2, which is negative 1, so 6 minus 1 is 5. With just that information, that leaves the impression that a positive school component, quote-unquote, helps a teacher's score, and a negative school component, quote-unquote, hurts a teacher's score. However, it's quite the opposite. Remember, the key part to understand is that the teacher effect is the teacher's performance relative to the school. It's her deviation from the school component. Thus, in the example I gave, the first example I gave, the teacher's students actually perform 8 points above state expectations. Remember, the school component was 2. The teacher's deviation from that was 6. So thus, in reference to state expectations, her students perform 8 points above expectations. In example 2, the teacher's students actually perform 4 points above state expectations. Remember, the school component is negative 2. Her deviation from that is 6. So thus, in reference to state expectations, that teacher's students perform 4 points above expectations. So those two scores, 8 and 4, would be the value-added scores if the model had fully attributed the school components to the teacher. In other words, if the theoretical framework had been that after controlling for all the factors in the model, all else is attributable to the teacher. However, the committee felt very strongly that the school itself exerts an independent influence on the student learning. That school impact is partially driven by the teachers, but also partially driven by other factors at the school, such as school leadership, the school environment, etc. So basically, it's a question of attribution. The student's performance relative to the state is the observed outcome, but by parsing out a teacher effect and a school component, one is determining how much of that observed outcome is the teacher truly held responsible for. So therefore, in example 1, her score, remember, is 7. Teacher effect of 6, school component of 2, so 6 plus half of 2 is 7. It is not 8, which is the observed outcome, remember, the observed outcome of her students relative to the state. The performance of the students is driven by the teacher, but is also impacted in part by the school. The teacher is not fully held accountable for that. Likewise, in example 2, her score is a 5, not a 4, which is the observed outcome. Again, the performance of the students is driven by the teacher, but also impacted in part by the negative school component. The teacher is not fully held accountable for that. I think it's helpful. I will advise folks, and I've advised folks when I go over this, to refer back to the PowerPoint presentation from the June 7th meeting of the Student Growth Implementation Committee. It's available on our website, and I'll read you the website address right now for easy reference. It's www.fldoe.org/committees/pdf /June7materials.pdf. That'll take you straight to that PowerPoint. It provides a helpful example of the committee's deliberations on really the impact of including all of that school component or not including any of that school component. And ultimately, where the committee landed is to include half of that school component. So with that, that concludes the example of the school component. We can go now into the different aggregation options and then open it up for the rest, for the duration of this call, to just general questions that we've had. First, the aggregation options.
Can I interrupt you for a second? This is Mike Grego. I would request that if districts have questions, because I mean Juan does a great job, but if you're like me, it's still somewhat confusing. And so, if there is some confusion out there, the best thing to do is to if you still look at the website and it's still confusing, is to call. I can't emphasize that enough. So let's talk about these things, because that's how I became a better student of this and was able to move forward with it. And so, create the phone call. It's in our best interest as a state to have 67 different phone calls, and let's continue to do that rather than increase confusion. So I encourage all of you at times, just have a key person in your district. It could be a conference call. We've had some very successful conference calls with districts that in 15 or 20 minutes, the investment is well worth it, because everyone left there having a better understanding of when they got on it, and that's our goal, and that has to be all of our goals. This is not easy stuff. We want to keep everything simple, but there's some things that simple doesn't also get us to our goal. So we are keeping it as simple as possible. We're also following the direct recommendations of this committee that did great work also, as you saw in August 1st and 2nd. So please do call. Don't be shy. Don't hesitate at all. Thank you.
No, absolutely, Chancellor. And as Chancellor mentioned, we have had a number of calls with districts across the state. And it's a challenging concept. It's absolutely a challenging concept. For those who are following the work of the committee, you can see how that challenging concept is documented. So we understand the challenge, and we're here to provide as much understanding and assistance as possible. In terms of the aggregation options, there were two basic aggregation options presented at aggregation classification options presented at the August 1st and 2nd meeting. The first option, which if you have your PowerPoint from that meeting, the discussion begins on slide 47. That was the method that basically requires districts to standardize the scores, those value-added scores, on a common metric. The notion being, of course, for those familiar with our state assessment, growth at the different grade levels varies. And so a score, for example, a value-added score, for example, of 10 in grade 4 may mean something completely different than a score of 10 in grade 10. So in order to compare all those teachers across those grade levels, it requires basically standardizing those scores, putting those scores on a common metric based upon some standard. And the data we provided on August 12th provides one option for how to standardize that, and that is standardizing it based on the average amount of growth per grade level and subject. AIR, as we communicated on August 12th, will be performing that calculation. Remember, when we left off August 1st and 2nd, we provided the tools necessary to make that calculation with the formula necessary to actually calculate that locally. But, of course, we can ease that burden, absolutely. And we did hear feedback from our districts to do so, and we worked with AIR for them to provide that aggregated score for a teacher so that you have, for each teacher, basically one score. Even though she may teach across multiple grade levels, across multiple years, one score that would combine everything, and also one score that would combine her reading performance and one score that would combine her math performance to provide districts that flexibility. We had hoped to provide that information to districts last week. We've run into some challenges driven in part by the events that occurred last week in the Northeast, namely the earthquake, the rare earthquake that was experienced, as well as Hurricane Irene. So those were added challenges to the delivery of data. We've been assured by AIR that it will be delivered to the department by the close of business today. So we would hope to have this out to districts by tomorrow, at some point tomorrow. That is what we are shooting for at this point. Now, that aggregation option, providing everything on a common metric, of course, one of the advantages of putting everything on a common metric is basically you can set one scale or one set of cut scores for all your teachers, at least on the reading and math portion of FCAT. That's one of the advantages of this system. The other aggregation and classification option that was given was basically to deal with the differences by grade level and subject by classifying those teachers independently in their grade level and subject. So, for example, if a teacher taught multiple subjects or multiple grade levels, she can receive a classification for each of those grade groupings and subject groupings. And then those classifications, for example, a 1-4 scale, could be put together in some sort of summative rating, basically a weighted average of all those classifications. And I've seen examples for some districts that are moving in that direction. I think on the face of it, that seems to be a, although it does have the added complexity of multiple scales, it does seem to be intuitively easy to understand, simply as classifying things independently and putting those classifications together into one scale. A third approach that some districts are pursuing is to use one of the pieces of data that was provided in the file that's not the value-added score, but rather is the percent of students that are meeting or exceeding their expectations. This piece of data, some districts are deciding to go this path because it's intuitively easy to understand, similar to at least in the metric sense, is similar to the learning gains percentage that we are all accustomed to. It's basically a percent of students that are meeting some sort of standard. I will note, though, however, that by going this route, you are losing some of the information that the value-added score provides, namely the magnitude by which students are moving. So, of course, the best theoretical example is you could have a teacher who has 100% of her students meeting or exceeding expectations, but they are doing that by just barely meeting or exceeding expectations, so her value-added score may be, you know, pretty low or close to zero. On the flip side, you could have a teacher where only 50% of her students are exceeding expectations, but that 50% is doing it by a wide margin. So basically the point I'm trying to raise here is that the score won't necessarily always correspond to the percentage, but the percentage does provide some information. Perhaps some can view it as a transition step to ease folks' understanding into this whole frame of thought. One more point I'll raise in terms of classification before we get into the questions is, of course, the application of the standard error. Many folks, that information, of course, was presented on August 1st and 2nd, and folks have had some questions about how to apply that as it relates to four different performance levels. One approach that I believe was presented definitely on August 2nd, not sure it was presented on August 1st in the afternoon, was one approach is basically to set a cut point based on the nominal score or based on the value-added score to basically make your first determination, is the teacher effective or highly effective, or is the teacher in the needs improvement or unsatisfactory category? So you can look at the score itself to make that first initial cut. Basically, teachers on the effective, highly effective part, teachers on the needs improvement, unsatisfactory part. And then use the standard error to determine the extreme categories because you want to have some degree, it makes sense to have some degree of statistical certainty in making those determinations at the highly effective group and the unsatisfactory group. So one way of viewing it is to have that cut point help you determine that this teacher is likely effective or highly effective, and then if she still clears that cut point when you apply a standard error to it or half a standard error to it or whatever level folks are comfortable with, then you have a better sense that this teacher is actually highly effective. Flip side on the needs improvement unsatisfactory side. So that is some thoughts that we've both that were presented August 1st and 2nd, that we've heard feedback from districts in terms of things they've been considering. And at this point, for the duration of the call, if we have a little over a half hour remaining, we'd like to open it up to questions from districts and really for us to provide as much assistance and guidance as we can during this call. But also, as the Chancellor mentioned, we definitely advise folks to, whenever they have questions, whenever they have something that they'd like really to seek some feedback on, things they're thinking of, we are here to assist, to serve as a sounding board, to really to provide whatever assistance we can to help folks get in good shape for that September 30th milestone event. And with that, we'll open it up to questions.
To ask a question, please press star 1. Your first question is from Mark Howard of Palm Beach.
Yes, Juan, this is Mark Barron speaking. I had emailed some questions regarding more details about the means and standard deviations and frequency distributions of the various metrics at, from the state level. Would we be getting that?
We can't provide that, absolutely, and I apologize if that email has not been responded to. I will look back and see what I can do on that.
Yeah, I want more, you know, right now in the file it had the 5%, 5 percentile cut and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We would like all the frequency statistics we can get with a particular issue of the frequency distribution of the entire range of scores.
Yeah, for the state level data, absolutely, because what you have the ability to do that, but it's only district level data, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Your next question comes from Shelley Halstead of Lee County.
Yes, hi, Juan. This is Richard Itzen in Lee County. My question is whether there are districts that are considering giving a separate rating per year and then aggregating them. And if we did that, I'm assuming we'd go through the standardization method, but just not across years. Does that make sense?
Yes. A couple things. Yes. If again, this is sort of a hybrid between option 2 and option 1, actually. Certainly, option 2, on its face, would require folks to set different cut points for the different grade levels and subjects, and possibly even across the different years. Absolutely, but you could standardize each year independently, so that you would only really have to set one scale for a particular subject for the year. Wouldn't have to set a separate scale for each of the grades, and then aggregate those across. You know, classify those independently, and then aggregate those across. That would be definitely acceptable way of doing it.
And the only weighting we would need to do then would be, for example, if a teacher had two different grade levels in the same year.
Correct, and I would advise whenever you aggregate, of course, to not just do a simple average, but to weight it by the number of students in each category. So, for example, if she's teaching fourth and fifth graders and she has twice as many fifth graders as fourth graders, the fifth grade score likely should be weighted more heavily than the fourth grade score.
All right, that makes sense. I do have another question, if I might.
Sure.
I think I asked this at the August 2nd workshop, but just to clarify, the state has included any student associated with a teacher in Survey 2 or Survey 3, correct?
That is correct, and that's in that historical data that you have. That is the case, absolutely.
And is that, has there been any discussion there among you all whether that's a recommended way of doing that, or do we have a latitude at the district to set different criteria for including students in the calculation? And if we do that, assuming we have to go back and recalculate everything.
That was raised definitely August 1st and 2nd. We are working to see how we could best facilitate that if we were to get in a position where districts would do that. One thing I will note, though, that to keep in mind with the whole Survey 2-3 match issue, remember that the model itself controls for student attendance and for mobility. So this is different than things we've done in the past with school grades, which is just basically a simple calculation, one standard for all, and you have that inclusion rule just to basically level the playing field, the same type of students in a sense of attendance, basically, that they are there the full year. But remember, the model itself controls for that on an individualized student basis. So if you have a student that, for example, is only there Survey 2 or is only there Survey 3, that student will have attended fewer days than the student that's there both surveys. Likely may have moved around a couple times and would have more mobility than a student that's been there both surveys. So that would be reflected in that student's expected score. So that's one thing to keep in mind on that point. The challenge that we've run across, of course, in doing a statewide limitation on only Survey 2-3 match students is this is driven really course level. And there's a lot of courses across this state, especially at the high school level, that are semester driven, not full year driven. So by accepting that full sale, that's our challenge, and it would potentially throw out a number of students simply by the fact that they're in semester courses. So,
Juan, at this point, the attendance is not course or teacher specific, though. It's just the number of days that the student attended in the district as a whole, correct?
In the school as a whole. It's daily attendance, daily attendance. So, again, just as Survey 2-3 is really not a course-driven metric either at this point. As we talked about August 1st and 2nd, we've already began the discussions of starting on a new collection, not for the 11-12 school year, but a collection of attendance at the course level. Again, all the models that were run were based on historical data, which of course was driven by daily attendance. So that is one of the areas that we're at right now.
So it's the attendance associated with the school. So if the student was associated with me in Survey 2 but left to go to another school, then it would show that he had very little attendance in my school.
That's correct. Let me get back to you, Richard, on that specific question on how that would specifically work. I understand your question in that would the attendance be cumulative for the whole year if the students have multiple schools? Let me verify an answer for that and get back to you.
All right, thanks, Juan.
I think the other thing I'll add is that the questions that we're going to put down on paper and get back, we'll distribute to all districts. So,
correct.
We'll answer it for everyone. Other questions?
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Felsch with Leon County Schools.
Hey, Juan, I got a couple questions. One is, could you talk a little bit about the corrections process for the data, either in the past or for this year, kind of like we do for FCAT? And second of all, a little bit about the proportional parsing. So if a student said school A for two-thirds of the year and school B for the third of the year, is it true that that proportion of the value be assigned to each of the schools?
Good morning, Paul. First on the data verification or data corrections process, we are working on in conjunction with Survey 2 and Survey 3, and a verification process of teacher rosters so that we know we have the right students with the right teachers going forward. Our current thinking at this point, of course, is that the current processes that are used for school grade purposes to verify the demographic data as well as to verify the assessment match information would continue as has been done over the few years. However, what we are envisioning at this point is that this roster verification system will basically serve as a membership file of sorts for this purpose, so that once we have final sign-off, final closure of assessment corrections was for school grades purposes, the assessment match file, when that's complete, that would then get matched against the verified rosters, which would serve as the basis for the value-added calculations. That would be for 11-12, and then, of course, any refinements moving forward. We do not have any specific plans in place to go back to the historical data to verify. One thing to keep in mind, and what many districts are doing across the state, is since Senate Bill 736 passed and is first to be implemented in the 11-12 school year, many districts are treating the 11-12 school year as basically as year one of the evaluation. So moving most of their or all of their teachers to the 40% of the evaluation, and then building out from 11-12 going forward. Many districts are going that route. The historical data basically serves as a reference point to help folks get a better understanding how the model works, as well as to help inform these decisions in terms of classification, et cetera. So that's one issue. The second issue you raised, I'm sorry, Paul.
Going back to that, is the verification linked directly to the survey, or is there going to be another data base?
In other words, will we be modifying Survey 3 to correct teacher rosters, or will we be modifying, say, your assessment file? Survey 3.
How it's being conceived at this point is Survey 2 and Survey 3 will feed this system, but it will be a standalone process.
Okay. And also, how do you envision the teachers being involved in this? Are they going to have to interface directly with the standalone process?
Great question. What we have envisioned right now is, this is part of a separate project with the Gates Foundation, and we're working with some pilot districts. But we've envisioned a process whereby we would create a web application where teachers would have the ability to view their rosters and basically indicate whether this student is really with her class or not with her class. But the final sign-off or the final correction would not take place at the teacher level. It would take place at either the school level or a district level. We've also want to provide the functionality that the rosters could be printed and it could be hand-delivered to teachers to sign off on. Some districts actually use that method and prefer that method, so we want to provide that option as well. And a final option that some districts also indicated to us that they use is to basically provide districts with a file format where they can handle the verifications locally and upload a new file once we give the file formats back to the state. So those are the three options we're working on for this roster verification process. But in all three, we do not envision the teacher having the final, basically making the correction, so to speak. That correction that is submitted to the state would have to occur at a higher level, be it the school or the district central office.
The second question I had was about the students who move around from school to school, and is the value-added score for that student parsed out proportional to the time they spent in schools?
We don't. The current model does not parse out students proportionally. Again, each student has different characteristics which go into their...
So it's assigned to the last teacher?
It would be, in the current way it's assigned, it would be assigned to both teachers, actually.
Oh, so... But it's not assigned proportionally?
No, but again, this is connected to Richard's question from Lee County.
Yeah.
My thought is that, and my thinking on this, I just want to verify it with the technical folks, is that, of course, the model itself has variables for attendance, has variables for mobility. Those would, of course, take into account the amount of time that the student has been present or has been moved around a number of times, which would go into the student's expectation. So again, we'll clarify that in our follow-up communications.
So the way I understand it, this is Mike Grego, is that if you have a student, it kind of levels the playing field. If you have a student that's absent 45 days, then the expected learning outcomes of students who are absent 45 days is provided. Same thing with mobility. Those are the factors that are attempting in the formula to be controlled for. So, you know, you would expect a student who has high mobility to not have the same learning gains as a student who is fairly stable. So by controlling that factor, you would bring that learning gain to both teachers. You wouldn't be trying to divide it, but rather you'd be trying to control for the variable early on or overall. That's all I understand it, not as a statistician.
So both teachers get complete credit for the full gains, even if the student was only there for a month.
But controlled for that variable, though, Paul.
Yes, I understand that.
You would control for those listed variables as in the statute, which you would anticipate, as they do, that a student with low attendance is not going to attain the same amount.
And so that's what the model shows. Fewer days present, the lower the expectation. More mobility, the lower the
lower expectation. So this way we protect the teachers from being harmed from high mobility areas or students. Another question.
Your next question comes from Owen Roberts with St. Lucie County.
Hi, Juan. I just need a clarification. I got the word this morning that in a phone meeting with FEA that we will not be getting the school VAM this year. Could you clarify that for me, please?
I am not aware of that call, nor that I'm not sure what that's about, to be honest.
Okay, so basically we are expecting to have both the teachers and the school VAM.
What is the
are you asking the value added information at the school level?
At the school level, correct.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. That's provided.
Yeah, which is what I know we had said, but I just heard this morning that in a phone meeting with FEA that it was said it might not be provided this year.
No, that's not correct. I think what Juan covered before was that the aggregated information, I think he went over the delay of that, and that'll be given to us at the close of business today. But everything else is on schedule, so this is moving forward. If you know of anything else, just give us a call, or Juan a call, or Kathy or myself, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
Your next question comes from Linda Maltesid with Escambia County.
Yeah, this is Raymond with Escambia County. We're one of the districts that's probably going to go with option 3, the percent of students meeting expectation.
Raymond, can you speak up a little?
I can try. Is that any better?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying we're one of the districts that's probably going to use the simple approach of, at least this year, of students meeting expectations as a percentage. And one of the questions I had is, you know, we would take that back to the student file, to the student level, and determine whether or not they, well, you know, there's a predicted score in there and there's an actual score, so we could easily calculate that percentage. And my question is, does the predicted score have a standard error that we could maybe use to adjust that score downward so that when we calculate those percentages, we're lowering our bar a little bit?
Raymond, I'll have to get back to you on that specific question. I don't think you'd want to go that route. I think you'd want to rely on what the prediction is and whether or not that student met or exceeded.
Well,
and those percentages are calculated for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, after we determine those percentages at the teacher level or whatever, you know, we of course could you know, make some adjustments there to say that if you're within such and such percent of the expectation, you're considered effective or whatever. But it seems like it would be more accurate to adjust it at the student level.
Let me follow up with you, Raymond, on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Heather Fiorentino from Pasco County.
Good morning. This is Amy. Several of us in during the August meetings took part in a focus group related to a database that they were discussing would be on the DOE website that would provide the value-added scores for the teachers come October. Is that still a plan that's going to occur?
Great question. We have, as part of our contract with AIR of the over the 4 years of Race to the Top, one part is to develop a reporting system of value-added results. We are moving in that direction cautiously this first year. We are not going to have a full-blown release of a statewide reporting system based on this historical data in October. That's not occurring. We're working on developing that reporting system. Want to go slow, pilot it. Make sure we are issues are resolved, et cetera. It's saying it's clear what it's reporting. But yes, eventually we will have a reporting system that provides public information, not necessarily at the teacher level, you know, like Mrs. Smith, this was her score, not that, but general information on how a district is doing, how schools are doing, et cetera, on the value-added piece. And it's part of actually Senate Bill 736 does have a number of reporting requirements for the state to report performance data as it relates to the evaluation.
Thank you.
Did you know?
No. Your next question comes from Dr. Sylvia Jackson of Jackson County.
Good morning, Mr. Copa. This is Sylvia. I have a couple of questions. One, did I understand you to say that the teacher effect and school effect scores would be provided by the state? And then the second part of my question is, can you tell us a little bit more about Approach 3? The first two approaches seem quite complicated, and my fear is that we might need a full-time statistician to help us figure that out. But you mentioned Approach 3 and possibly using percent of students making gains. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and which districts are using that approach?
Sure. The first question, the teacher value-added score is composed of that teacher effect and the school component, as we went over. That information is provided in the files that were received on August 1st and 2nd.
Yes.
And we will, again, the state will always be calculating that for the state assessments, providing that to districts. The second question about Option 3, is basically using, again, the model itself develops an expectation for each student in terms of how the student is expected to perform on FCAT in this particular case, given the factors or the characteristics controlled for the model, you know, given how the student performed in the prior year, given the student's attendance patterns, given the student's disability status, ELL status, et cetera. So for each student, an expectation is calculated, and then basically what's happening is that expectation is then judged against how the student actually did. And if the student beat that expectation or met or beat that expectation, that would count as basically, in a language that we're all familiar with, a gain. If the student did not meet that expectation, that would not count as a gain. And basically the percentage is the sum of all those students who met the gain divided by the sum of all the students the teacher taught in a particular grade and subject. So basically what it yields is a percentage similar to what we are accustomed to with learning gains, you know, that is a percentage metric. And it uses the value-added formula to inform that percentage. Some districts are intrigued by that idea because, again, it's intuitive. Folks can wrap their heads around it. It's a percent. Folks are used to that. The only issue I will raise, though, that and the statisticians want me to point this out every time, is that by going that route, again, you're taking the value-added score, which, you know, provides you a range in the sense of how much teachers are moving students. You're taking that and basically parsing it down to a yes-no determination. Did the student make a gain or did the student not make a gain? And so you lose some information. You lose the information in terms of how far teachers are moving their students. But you do gain some information in the sense of, you know, ease to understand. So that's a trade-off. But again, we are aware Escambia pointed out they are going that route. There are a few other districts that have indicated they are planning to go that route. It makes sense to go as a possibility for, you know, at least as a transition to the more sophisticated, statistically savvy of value-added score. So again, it's another option available to districts to consider, and one that some have seen some appeal in because of the ease of understanding.
Just one other thing, if we did go the third route, could we in fact take into consideration the attendance and mobility of students that have been assigned to a teacher?
Sylvia, it's already taken into account because remember, basically the determination of did the student make a gain or did the student not make a gain, all that, those expectations are individualized in a sense based on those characteristics, which include attendance and all the other factors in the model. So it's already taken into account.
Okay. What I need to do is I'll call in and try to have a little bit more clarification. I'm not embarrassed to admit that this process is a little bit complicated, at least for me and my team that's sitting with me.
Sylvia, we're not embarrassed either. So call in. I encourage you to, because we're learning as we go too, and that's an important thing. There's no ridiculous questions. So please do. We have an opportunity to make this work, or we have an opportunity to stay confused. And let's make sure this works. It is going to be a transition year for many of us. And I want to thank the districts who have already, you know, we have a lot of great responses already. And I think that's one of the benefits of holding off and casting everything into concrete is we're learning also at the department for ways that may not be real productive to the path to go down. And it wouldn't have been harmful if we just said this is it without having really tested this model out and tried various ways before we cast something in stone. So there is a benefit of having a little pain through this first transition year, learning a lot together, and then coming out of the end with some prescribed best practices, what we'll call it. So Florida is not going to go all the way back to the start line as we've done in the past. So I'm encouraged by the involvement, the engagement of districts, and also the thought process because it's helping us all. Trust me, it's not like we're sitting here with all these answers. Every great question, we're really somewhat having to check on, and it's a good process to go through. I know it could be a little bit uncomfortable, but it's one that'll I think make this model stronger in the end. So stay with it. Don't give it up. Any other final questions? I know we're running out of time with the hour, and Kathy has one more announcement. So think about if you have any final questions as she does the announcement.
I just wanted to let everybody know that we are taking notes and have been taking notes. Holly has been throughout the call, and we'll send those to you so you have the questions and the answers that were provided today. We also have a couple of things we have to follow up on that we'll eventually add to that information, but you will be getting those notes later today. Also, Holly wanted me to remind you that when you send your documentation in September 30th, that because it is a deliverable, you send it into the Race to the Top email address, as per usual.
And these are deadlines that are established by the by us and the Federal Department of Education, so I appreciate your understanding. I mean, like anything else, as we establish deadlines, we've got to buckle down and make every effort to get that information and get this stuff done. Our original deadline, I think, if I remember, was September 1, and when we determined with the U.S. DOE that we could, you know, get to the end of that first quarter, we took advantage of it for great reasons, because we wanted to provide you with all the time in the world, but, you know, there has to be some established timelines on this, and so we appreciate the districts, and we're under the same types of timelines. It's amazing what you get done when you establish deadlines, though, too. So let's keep moving, and let's keep moving together, and let's keep asking the great questions. Any final questions?
Your next question is from Jason Cochran.
Hi, can you provide an update on when and how we might receive value-added data for teachers who don't necessarily teach an FCAT subject but have students who did take the FCAT test?
In terms of moving forward, we have had discussions with AIR on a process best to do that, whether it's some sort of application or mechanism that will allow you to basically apply the value-added results or expectations for those students to come up with a score for those teachers. Likely, those discussions are focusing on the 11-12 results. So that's pretty much where we stand right now in that regard.
We'll provide you an update on that as soon as we can.
Your next question comes from John Boyd of Othello County.
Good morning. My question is simply if you would please restate the requirements due on September 30. I understand about the letter, but the second half I need clarified.
Sure, and those will be in the notes too as well, so you can see it in writing. But we need the final version of the documentation that you already submitted June 1st. You've made some changes since then, so another version of what you sent in June 1st that reflects all those changes is needed. In addition, the new information that was not submitted June 1st is exactly what Juan was talking about just now. How are you determining the scale or rubric or criterion for student growth for all of your teachers using the value-added results? That should be included in this documentation as well.
Folks, thank you very much. If you have other questions, please email them or call us. We'll put them out in a deliverable to you back there. We're out of time, but hopefully this has been profitable. It has for us, beneficial, so I believe we'll continue this series of conference calls at least through this month to get any of these questions answered, and we'll continue it on. I think it's been good. So thank you very much. Have a great day. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This will conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines.